because anytime I see someone that is all in, sold out to a very committed vision, I look at that person, I say, that person has sacrificed so much.
Welcome to the Promised Brand Podcast, where if you are a founder, CMO, or just an executive, someone who's curious about building great brands for impact or building strategy, these are the conversations for you. I'm your host, Luke Frazier, founder of Parable Brand, where we are on a mission to tell brand stories that don't suck so that entrepreneurs can build companies that people care about. The reality is you are probably here either because you know our guest or you've been following along for a while, and I wonder, you might be convicted by some sort of curiosity around how do I build a more engaged brand, or how do I get our customers to really care about our message, or better yet, you truly care about building a great culture at your company. And these are the conversations that dive into those topics, dive into market insights and things that are happening right now in the marketplace with other entrepreneurs, other brands, and people growing great things. We break down things like that to better support you. If you want to find out any more information about the work that we do with brands and strategy, you can find us at parablestory.com. Now on to today's guest. I'm so excited to share this particular conversation with you. We have with us today Alex Judd, founder of Path for Growth. He is just a value-driven professional that seeks to do good and help other impact-driven leaders step into who they were created to be so that others benefit and God is glorified. You'll hear that mission statement and more in this conversation. So I give to you Mr. Alex Judd. Well, Alex Judd, I just want to welcome you to the Promised Brand Podcast. Thank you for taking some time to chat today.
Dude, stoked to be here. I've been looking forward to this. It's been too long since we've had an extended conversation, so this is going to be good.
Now, I do have to warn our listeners here briefly, Alex. We did just mention the last time you and I talked, I thought it was going to be a 30-minute conversation, and I think we ended up about 2 hours, so we're going to do our best to keep this within 4 hours today, if at all possible. But Alex, you as I have connected with you over the years, I've seen you grow from a host in the entree leadership realm, the Dave Ramsey realm, now founding what is known as Path for Growth. I believe, what are you guys, 4 years in now? Almost five?
We're almost 4 years almost in, so four. I think we're at 3.5 right now.
4 years in to Path for Growth. And you have really been a deep learner, sort of a humble learner of my perspective, of all things business growth, all things biblical knowledge, all things sort of personal growth as well, which is just amazing. I want to start from as beginning of business as we can with you, just to understand, why did you begin Path for Growth? I know there was like a deep-seated desire in there. So why did you begin it, and what has it evolved into today?
Well, I appreciate that question. And just in general, I appreciate you for having me on. I've really been looking forward to this. Yeah. You know, there was a period of time in probably April, May of 2020, mm-hmm. that I kind of found myself wishing that I hated the place that I worked, and found myself really challenged by the fact that that wasn't the case, right? I worked at Ramsey Solutions, which is Dave Ramsey's company, right? He, in many ways, and that company in many ways, is a household name. And I found myself thinking like, man, I just wish I had a bunch of bad things to say about this place, about the culture, about the work that we're doing, about the service and products products that we provide and the people that I work with. And I just found myself in this position where I was like, that's not the case at all. I love this place. Mm-hmm. I love these people. I love this mission. I would tell people all the time, this place is like the Christian Google, right? Like, it's insane. The level of just passion that's in that building. And truly, I mean, like every single day, there's people that are coming into that building saying, you changed my life, you transformed my marriage, you transformed my business. Wow. It just, like, hope is in the mission of that place, and it's embedded in everything they're doing.
Yeah.
And so that brought me to a really interesting crux in about May of 2020, because it was over the course of probably about 6 months that I started to have inklings of, like, man, I think I feel deeply called and compelled that I would love to be an entrepreneur one day. Yeah. I've worked with and around business owners for almost a decade at that point, and I realized if I didn't step out to try it on my own, I might spend my entire life wondering what if. And that inkling kind of developed over time and created a source of extreme tension. Oftentimes over the course of my life, I've coincided with people that are faced with what seems like two really awesome options, right? Like, I remember, you know, years and years before I ever owned my own business, coincided with business owners, and they're like, well, I have someone offering to buy our company for $20 million, or I can stay and lead this incredible team for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And they would struggle so much with that decision. I was like, I don't understand. Why is this a struggle? These are both, like, outstanding options.
Yeah.
But that's how it felt at Ramsey, right? Mm-hmm. Like, was I have this incredible place to work that is such a gift, that so many people would kill to be a part of this team, mm-hmm. work with the people that I'm working with, learn the things that I'm learning, or I have this deep-seated call inside me,
yeah.
to step out and launch this business. And ultimately, if I was to boil it down into a really simplified way, it felt like it was an obedience call, yeah, right? Yeah. It felt like, you know, that to do anything different other than pursue what was on my heart at that time and what I felt like God had given me a deep-seated and profound yearning for at that time, to deny that or even delay that would have been disobedience, I think. And so, you know, it was gut-wrenchingly hard, right? I did not have this story of storming out with absolute confidence that, like, screw you guys, I'm leaving to start my own thing. I did not have that at all. I had this, like, entirely doubt-filled, like, process of taking small steps towards, yeah. like, I really hope this is right and I'm not screwing up massively right now. But, and that's why it's just such a gift that I'm so beyond grateful and blessed for, that it's worked out the way that it has, Luke.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, this is amazing to me, because you spent years around entrepreneurs, interviewing many entrepreneurs, very successful entrepreneurs. Now, to this day, as a company, you often coach entrepreneurs, coach value-driven professionals in the industry, probably dealing with similar kinds of tension on a daily basis. What do you find your own struggle with that tension? Or where do you find that struggle with the tension now connected with the people that you coach, having gone through it yourself? Do you feel there is a deeper connection to them? Do you feel like you can empathize better? Do you feel like it's made your company more successful because you know the struggle? Is there no connection at all? But I imagine you struggling to get to this place, in a good struggle, the tension of wanting to start a business, feeling that there's an obedience call to God, because I think many entrepreneurs, I think many founders feel the same kind of thing. There's a deep problem they want to solve in the world. But how has you going through that experience impacted the way you serve today?
That's such a good question. A few things come to mind. I think the first is that it's given me, like, a more deep understanding mm-hmm. and respect for any time I see someone that's chasing a vision, right? Like, really all out, passionately pursuing a vision. Because I think before, I certainly liked that person. I admired that person. I thought they were, I thought highly of them. I thought they were very energetic and charismatic, right? I loved visionary leaders for a long time. Now it feels different, because anytime I see someone that is all in, sold out to a very committed vision, I look at that person, I say, that person has sacrificed so much. Mm. They have said one overwhelming, overarching yes to this thing. And in doing so, they are constantly, all the time, saying no to so many other things that aren't just bad. It's not like they're saying no to like robbing the Walmart so they can run this company, right? It's like they're saying no to all of these outrageous opportunities because they feel so compelled by this thing. And it's given me a deeper respect for the amount of sacrifice that it takes to maybe start a vision, but more than that, sustain a vision, right? Like I just, I like the people that have been doing it for 20 years. Oh my gosh. Those people are such heroes to me.
Yeah.
Right. 20 mile march, 20 miles every single day in the same direction over and over and over again, because you're so committed to it, compelled by it and called to it. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Those are the people that I feel like I have a way deeper respect for now, because I feel like I have a stronger understanding of the sacrifice that vision demands of us.
There's a tension I often find in brand when I talk to people, really business strategy, building a business in general, that we think we often solve problems for clients. It's kind of why we see a problem in the world, we think we're the solution. One of the ways that I've looked at sort of reframing that is actually as businesses, client, prospect, potential customer has problem. And really we as a business are actually not the solution to their problem, because they probably have a million other problems, let alone the tension of getting to their vision, managing people, getting revenue, but rather we're the bridge to their solution. And we're just sort of generalizing that. Obviously, there's specific problems. Now, I say that because your mission as a company is to help impact-driven leaders step into who they were created to be, so that others benefit and God is glorified. How do you see that mission statement being the bridge for the people you serve from their problems to potential solutions in their businesses, in their families, in their lives?
I haven't thought about it as a bridge before, but I think that's a really good metaphor. I guess what I would say is that the way I really think about our mission and challenge our team to think about our mission, and then beyond that, challenge our customers who own or run businesses to think about the mission of their business, is primarily at its core, your mission is not marketing collateral. I really believe that your mission is the answer to why do you exist. And like the purpose of why you exist is not marketing. It's not for your website. It's not for your one pager. It's not for your one liner conversation that you have on the elevator or at your kid's baseball game. I think that it can certainly show up and manifest in those places, but that's not the reason why you're creating it. Why are you creating a compelling mission, a purpose, an aspirational statement that really cauterizes and concretizes why your business exists? You're creating a mission so that you can rally the people in the building around why they're serving the people outside the building.
That's really good.
And that's so crucial for us to understand, because my team of people, I don't need to remind them, hey, don't you forget, we do one-on-one coaching. Hey, don't you forget, we offer team trainings. They know what we do, and I know what we do, right? The thing that I'm so capable of forgetting, drifting from, or deviating from is why I'm doing what I'm doing, right? That's the heartbeat of our business. He wasn't talking about organizational culture when he wrote Proverbs 4:23, but when Solomon said, guard your heart above all else, what he's really saying there is not guard your emotions, right? That's a very Western view of that verse. He's saying, guard the center of your will, your intellect, and your emotional being, because it's the core of who you are, and out of that flows everything you do.
Yeah,
I think to go one step further into a little bit more secular writing, Peter Drucker is probably like the father of modern management, right? Is how most people think of it. He had all this stuff figured out like 60 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, like, the most effective executives make the smallest number of decisions at the highest conceptual plane possible. Mm. And so what he's talking about there is advanced decision making. There's a certain few decisions that if you make them at the high level, it will impact and influence every single interaction you have. And that's, I think, what connects to the idea of a bridge, right? I can look at our 19-year-old intern on our team, right? And I can see him having a customer conversation, a conversation with one of our customers, where he's embodying our core values, where he is emboldened by the value and importance of that conversation. And if I were to tell you why he's interacting so effectively and so professionally, and he's engaging them and he's passionate and he's like all in on this conversation, I would tell you it's that mission, right? Because that's the bridge of how us inside the building connect to the people outside the building.
So good. Mission, vision, and values in the brand space, in the business strategy space, are often either, I think, often confused, or they're often created and then put on a shelf somewhere, put on a wall somewhere, and people often do find them hard to embody or lead by or hire for. Was there a moment in the creation of that mission and the creation of your values, when you were hiring, when you were finding new team members, even when you were bringing clients on, was there a moment in the past couple of years that you realized, holy cow, like this isn't just me anymore. This isn't just my idea or a vision God gave me. These are people living it out. Is there a moment where you've seen that, you know, you just mentioned your intern, but outside that, or maybe even when was the first moment that you realized other people get the mission, other people are living the values out? Where was that moment for you?
Well, are you familiar with the Enneagram, Luke?
Oh yeah. Big time.
Yeah. So I would assume maybe your listeners are as well, but if not, it's just a helpful personality profile that kind of splits into 9 types. And I once heard someone say that, like, when you read Myers-Briggs or Strength Finders or DISC, you read and you're like, oh my gosh, that's totally me. And then if you read the Enneagram, you say, oh my gosh, that's totally me, right? And it reveals some really dark things about yourself. Sure. So I'm kind of wired as what would be described as a 3 on the Enneagram, right? Which is an achiever. And one of the core maybe sins or dark motives of a person that's wired in that way is that they will basically abandon themselves to win the approval of others, right? A effective 3 on the Enneagram has this ability, not in a good way, to become a chameleon and be whatever. I will be whatever I need to be for other people to give me a thumbs up. Yes. And that, I mean, I've had to learn the dark side of that the hard way over the course of the past 2 decades, right? Yeah. And it's a constant journey towards health, but it's something that I think building this business has really helped me with, is like leaving Ramsey, leaving the public persona position that I was in there, leaving all the opportunity and the glitz and glam associated with it that I had there. It was really basically all in on, like, okay, I want to go to a place where I can literally be myself. And that's really challenging, because then you are faced with, like, you got to be yourself. And you're kind of taking this step of faith of, like, well, I hope people like me, right? Because if they don't, this isn't going to work out too good.
Right. Right.
But I think I kind of stripped off a little bit of the need and impulse for winning the approval of others. And it was probably, honestly, the most a season probably at that point that it was the most right-sized and authentic I've ever been in my entire life.
Wow.
Right? Because it was on the heels of a really difficult decision. And I was just like, okay, it's just me now. And, like, we're going to try and figure this out.
Yeah.
And it was out of that the core values and the mission and all of that was birthed. And what was wild is I had this conversation with, it was actually with a customer of mine at one point, and she just kind of commented, she said, like, Alex, like, you spend so much time with your customers. Like, when you travel, you have dinner with them on Friday nights. Like, you go hiking with them. Like, you invite them over to your house whenever they're in town. She's like, it's just really unique that you spend so much time with your customers. Yeah. And like, you just, you treat them like they're your friends. And I was like, I mean, it's nice that you're complimenting me for that, but it's like, I actually feel like they're my friends. I love these people. Yeah. I find entrepreneurs so wildly interesting.
Yeah.
And all the people we're working with right now are impact driven. So like, I mean, those are the type of people that if I wasn't hanging out with them, I would want to be hanging out with them, right? And that was when it clicked for me, like, oh, you don't attract what you want, you attract what you are.
Mm.
And as long as I was just trying to be whatever the marketplace wanted me to be to win the approval of other people,
yeah,
it was just a smattering of what I would engage with in relationship and certainly as customers and team members. Mm-hmm. The more I started going all in on the man, the leader, the Christ follower, the community member, the friend that God created me to be, and started to say, like, man, God gave me specific wirings, passions, yeah, talents, gifts. He even gave me specific weaknesses.
Yeah.
Like, he gave me all of these things. And therefore, it would be wise for me to understand them and live into them. It was wild. Like, the right team members started coming to us.
It's powerful.
And the evidence of the right team member was, like, we'd share our core values, and they'd be like, the reaction wasn't, that's nice, or that's cool, or I agree with those. The reaction was like a gasping breath that said, oh my gosh, I finally found a place that feels the same way about this that I do.
Wow.
And that's when you know. You're like, that's when you know we defined us, and then we also gave them a language to be able to opt in and want to be a part of.
Yeah. There are, and I just listened to awesome guy. His name's Michael King. He, and you might be connected with him. He does work for fractional CFOs, and he was walking one of his clients through niching down. I just watched this morning. He was talking to someone about it, and the lady he was coaching through was exhibiting sort of these fears and worries of like, well, the service that I offer is really good for all these other businesses. Like it works for them. And he asked her, well, who do you like working with the most? Like, what gives you the most energy? And we're like, well, I don't like working with these people, like this industry, because they're this way. This industry, I love working with them because they're on their, like, and what he didn't quite dive into a little bit deeper, I don't think there was enough time, was she was communicating what I believe. They get my values. They appreciate my morals. They align with who I am as a business owner in person. And I think a lot of business owners are fearful of doing that. Not only in the startup phase, we worked with a client that was around for 40 years last year that was still afraid to sort of commit to this is who we are as an organization. As you've coached entrepreneurs, because I also believe, to step back, I think we're talking about culture here and building culture. Where do you see businesses thrive in this realm, or rather, why do you see businesses thrive in the realm of building culture? And then why do you see some entrepreneurs or some founders struggle with, like, I don't know if I can, what if we do say this is who we are? What if we do say we glorify God, for instance? What if we do say that we want to serve this kind of industry? Where do you see people that win in that space? And then why do you think people falter with it often?
Mm. Yeah, well, I love that you brought up Michael. He was actually just one of the keynote speakers at our most recent in-person experience.
That's right.
And dude is just such a stud, such a brilliant communicator. Yeah. He's someone that I really respect as business leader as well. And I think what you're saying about niching down there and about what he taught on that is probably maybe one of the harder conversations that most business owners have to have,
yeah,
right? Because we think that in order to grow our business or to make our business bigger, the path towards that is wider. Mm. And wider is not necessarily the best route to get bigger, unless your goal is to become Walmart, right? Yeah. But rather, most people I know aren't setting out to become Walmart, right?
Yeah.
And therefore, the road to getting bigger, to experience business growth, is often not going wider, it's going deeper.
Mm.
It's getting better in more specific ways for really specific people.
Yeah.
And because what does Walmart do? I've never seen someone say like, oh my gosh, this thing that I got from Walmart, it feels like it was perfectly designed for me,
yeah.
right? Like it was like when they built it, they had me in mind and they were building the cooler or the chair or the thing that it's like so perfectly handcrafted in alignment with my values, the way they messaged it to me. No, when people talk about Walmart, they're like, it was cheap. So I got it at Walmart. Right?
Got some good Crocs.
Exactly. Yeah. Which that's Walmart's aim, right? And I have no problem with that if that's Walmart's aim. And there might be certain people out there that cheap is their primary value, which that's fine, right? But if that's not what you want to be, if you want to do business with people that maybe value things that you value, then it's going to be you getting better and better at serving them in more and more specific ways.
Yeah.
I think to maybe take your question in a little bit of a different way, I think that there is a lot of what I would call arrogance embedded in the way that lots of people talk about culture, and it actually results in really bad business. Because people understand that culture is who we are, right? And what that should be is why we exist, what we stand for, and where we're going, right? That's who we are. But in the process of saying, this is who we are, you can do business with us whether you like it or not, a lot of times they stop listening to the marketplace altogether.
Hmm.
And whenever it comes from like why you exist and you start asking the question of what is the product, service, or value you deliver, like you don't have the luxury of saying, well, this is just who I am. And like, whether you like it or not, that's up to you, right? No, like you got to be ruthlessly in tune and putting your ear to the marketplace saying, what did they value? What are they looking for? What are they asking for? What do they actually want? And we're going to provide that in a way that aligns with our mission and values. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's a really important distinction of we got to retain the culture of why we exist and what we stand for, but we've also got to keep our ear relentlessly connected to and in tune with what the marketplace is telling us about what they want. And we've got to look for the places where those two things collide, and it's just a beautiful marriage.
This gets me excited because we're in a world and day and age right now where market trends, because of the internet age that we're in, are vastly outweighing fundamental business principles. Because people are excited about it, the shiny object syndrome, I feel like we're almost breeding that into the next generation just because of the accessibility that we're giving them. What is your take, or where have you seen, maybe just for you in your own lane, in your own business, what are you doing about new flashy market trends versus your business principles? How are you going about that with your team? How are you pursuing some? Because I imagine you have, like, we have to, right? Our clients want these things. So we have to learn them. How are you saying no to some, right? So where sort of are you in that space right now of new market trends, business fundamentals that we've, you know, especially biblically, we never should leave behind. And then the journey between.
Yeah. Can I give you an example of where
we're kind of working
through this right now? So we've kind of started to dabble or explore dabbling in the realm of pursuing YouTube as a marketing platform, right? And we've been talking to a handful of companies that are really, really wildly effective at what they do in terms of getting your message out on YouTube to reach new people. And honestly, like their aim is like doing it in a viral way.
Gotcha.
Right. And so we've kind of started to explore that as an avenue that we might pursue. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting with that is the minute you start asking the question, how do we reach a bunch of people in a viral way? Like, there are very specific strategies to do that. And the very specific strategies are like, well, you want to make sure you're talking about stuff that's controversial, right? You want to make sure that you understand that people's attention span is the size of
3 to 5 seconds.
Yeah, right, like a tree frog veering towards a fruit fly, right? Like, that's people's attention span. And yeah, then, you know, it would be really, really helpful if you were big and bombastic in the language that you use.
Sure.
But it would also be really good if you remember that most people read and listen at a third grade level, so don't use too big of words, and make everything more dramatic than it actually was, and don't tell too long of stories. And so there's all this criteria, right? And so not necessarily good or bad. Yeah. That just is, right? That's just the truth about what it takes to be viral on YouTube today, or it's a proven path to being viral on YouTube today. So a lot of business leaders today, I think, are actually doing themselves, their teams, and their customers a disservice by not questioning any of those strategies at all. Mm. They're basically just saying, well, if that's the best way to go viral,
yeah,
then let's do it.
Yeah.
And they're not even stutter stepping, right? They're not even asking, okay, do we actually want to go viral? Why do we want to go viral? What type of people do we want to go viral with? What are we going to do when we quote unquote go viral? Will this create the type of future that I actually want? Because what you create, you will have to sustain, right?
Wow.
And then let's go one step further into like, what is my contribution to society in this, right? So when people tell me stats around the human attention span getting less and less, and that as new generations come of age, they're not able to listen to a full conversation without thinking about their phone or the next YouTube video that they're going to watch.
Yeah.
I don't listen to that, and I don't say like, well, that's just great. I just love that that's where we're at today. And I think that is so good because that's probably going to result in young people getting closer to God. That's not how I feel about it, right? Yeah. So then I should really question my, like, whether me pursuing a strategy that may result in a few more leads in the short term, but I'm actually contributing to people's attention span. I'm just like accepting that's the way that it is. So now I'm going to become a player in that marketplace. Yeah. Right. And so that's where I have to look at my values, and I need my team to hold us accountable to our values as we make decisions around this and say like, what do our values say about this? Well, our values are point to Jesus, alignment, freedom and responsibility, treat people like friends, and strength is for service. Right. Mm-hmm. The one that stands out, I think there's actually tie-ins to most of them, but the one that stands out is like alignment. The message we give is the way that we live, right? Like, here's the way I think about it. A lot of our conversations with the one-on-one customers that we have, business owners that we coach, one of the greatest things that's getting in their way is unintentional distraction. Right? It's the attention span thing.
Yep.
So if that's the case, and we're constantly working on coaching them to like not participate in that so that they can actually focus on the things that matter most, does it feel right for me to simultaneously be producing content on YouTube that is at the same time trying to distract people and deviate their attention and make them non-focused and non-productive, honestly?
Right.
It's like, no, I don't think it does. So I think my values tell me, like, it doesn't mean I can't engage on YouTube. It just means that virality can't be the overarching idol that I bow down to in the way I engage on YouTube.
Right.
Does that connect to your question?
This is beautiful. I think most businesses don't use their mission. I'd call their brand strategy or a piece of it, their mission, vision, values, who you are, where you're going, why you're going there. I don't think most businesses use this as a filter of decision-making. And I think that's absolutely what they're designed to do. And this is why I think a lot of people think the idea of having a brand strategy or an identified workbook or a brand Bible, brand operating system, the idea of it is like, okay, that's nice, but that's just kind of like, it's another thing we'll have on the marketing side. It's not a full business in-depth playbook. When in reality, that's what it should be, right? That's the investment that it should, because what it's doing is helping you make day-to-day decisions. It's not just a nice quote on the wall that you can get excited and motivated by once a year with your team at your offsite.
Yes. And I would even go one step further. It is not a filter. It is the filter, you should be using for decision making, right? Like, like the first conversation we have with anyone that interviews at Path for Growth is, these are our values.
Yeah.
Period. Right. The first conversation we have with our customers.
Yeah. I was going to say,
We tell our customers, this is our mission. These are our values. Yep. Any team member that applies, this is our mission. These are our values. Even with vendors that we work with, we say, these are our values. How do you align with those? What do you think? Right. And what's so wildly helpful about that is so many decisions are already made.
Right.
Right. And man, I get so passionate about this, not because I'm like condemning anyone's way of doing things. Yeah. I just want to help you.
Yeah.
I just like, decision fatigue is like very, very real. And every single time I've seen a business owner, and this is crazy, this is a crazy statement. Every single time I've seen a business owner properly integrate core values into their team, every single time they would say that that was one decision that made everything else more efficient and more effective simultaneously.
It's unreal.
That's absurd. Anytime you hear someone say it was one thing that made everything else we do more efficient and more effective, you should be all over that, like white on rice, right? Like you should be, I mean, and I just believe that it's true. Why? Because again, you're making decisions at the highest conceptual level possible.
Yeah.
And so, but what I would tell you, Luke, and this is why I think the work you do is so important, so good. If people haven't seen it, they don't understand what it looks like to do it.
Yeah.
And so what I would tell people is that with a lot of the business owners we work with, their business that they own was their first job, right? And so they haven't had the exposure that I've gotten to have to work for like a wildly influential church in West Austin, or to be around leaders and organizations from around the country, or to work for Dave Ramsey's team, right? Yep. They haven't gotten to have that, which isn't their fault, right? It's just the way their story has taken them. And so they don't know what it looks like. And so go find a value-based organization, and literally, we have leaders do this all the time. Email the CEO of that organization or email someone internally in that organization and just say, I'd love to come shadow a team meeting and just sit in there for a team meeting and just take notes on what I observe and offer to buy them lunch or something.
Yeah.
And you will learn so much just from going and seeing.
Yeah.
From observation, it's just so powerful. And that's when it typically clicks for people.
Right. And that investment, like that is such a low level way to step into something that could truly increase your ROI. It could increase your level of people that you hire, right? It could increase your output. I mean, it is wildly efficient to every decision you make as an organization. And all you have to do is go spend an hour with somebody else who's doing it. And I think
it feels wildly inefficient though, right? I think anything related to culture, it's a slow burn.
Oh, yes. Yeah. If you've never seen it, it feels I'm sorry, you're not going to bring me 100 qualified leads tomorrow. You want to spend 12 weeks figuring out who I am so that then maybe
that's
next,
right. And
next
why
year,
do... Yeah, why do people struggle to lose weight, right? It's not because they don't know that they're overweight. It's because the discomfort of exercise is way more visceral immediately than the results you experience long term.
Yeah.
Right? The tail on the discomfort is very short. The tail on the results of pounds off on the scale, that takes 3 weeks minimum for you to start really churning there. Right. And that's if you're working really hard, right? And the same thing is true with culture. Immediate discomfort. Yeah. Like I've never seen an organization go from not really engaging with this intentionally and proactively to start without, I mean, honestly, number one, kind of questioning, is this worth our time?
Yeah.
Number two, having to spend a lot of like time in meetings discussing like, what are these values? What is this mission? And then number three, once you actually define them, every time I've seen an organization of more than 10 people roll these out, almost always someone ends up getting fired, right? Yeah. Because it becomes crystal clear, okay, this person isn't us anymore. Yeah. And so that's all of the discomfort, right, that you're going to experience right off the bat before you experience any of the positive benefit and results. So you just kind of got to take the step of faith and say, I mean, success leaves clues, right? Yeah. We should remember that. I can't think of a single wildly effective and successful organization in the way you and I would define success, Luke, that hasn't done this.
Right.
And so that should be great encouragement for us to go through that pain, but it doesn't mean that it's not going to be painful.
Yeah. What I find cool is you oftentimes just the nature of who you are as an individual, Alex, and I think what you've incorporated into your business from a cultural standpoint and in part of your values, you know, I'd say your idea of alignment or even treating people like friends, freedom and responsibility. I think what you've created in those values is sort of that humble learner mentality, very Jesus-esque, right? I'm not going to go into a conversation thinking I know everything, but I want to learn from this person. And then maybe there might be a value exchange happen there. I've seen you do this, and I've seen you look at other brands. I've seen you've been influenced by other brands, other founders, other individuals that are making great cultures. They're making great decisions. They're relearning new things on a daily basis. But I'm really curious for you just today, looking at kind of the marketplace. What are, you know, maybe two brands maybe that you've seen sort of the inner workings of, and then maybe one you haven't seen the inner workings of, but one you've like just been able to observe from the outside and just can kind of tell for both of these companies, can just tell those are amazing brands. They have amazing people, amazing values, amazing, you know, mission. And I can feel, see, and observe that they're going to the same place together as a team. What are two of those great brands that you've witnessed and really admire?
Well, first of all, I think it would be improper for me to receive a compliment like Jesus-esque and to not acknowledge that I really appreciate that compliment. He's obviously the model that I'm striving. I'm so far from his league, it's not even funny, right? But like, I think that the model that I see in Jesus is someone that asked way, way, way more questions of people than he gave immediate answers, that told stories that made people think, that was constantly with the people that were broken and hurting and challenged.
Yeah.
He never got into this silo or to this ivory tower by himself when if anyone could have done that, it would have been him.
Yeah.
And then I just think about that verse, like, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Like, I think what that means is like, blessed are the people that realize how bankrupt they actually are, right? And like, we work with leaders on this all the time, whether they're Christian or not. Like, the more you lead, the more you need. Mm. And man, I am my best as a leader when I come face to face with the reality that the amount I don't know far outweighs the amount that I do.
Yeah.
And the if I can reimmerse myself in that reality every morning, then the way I engage with people looks radically different. And so I think everyone wins when you decide to take on the posture of humble learner. Right. And so we should never abandon that. And it's one thing that we are all capable of abandoning, myself included, but we should be vigilant to preserve and continue to pursue.
Yeah.
But with that, and to that note, conversation around brands, I'll give you the three and then we can kind of dissect them as you'd like. I'd say, one is one that I've worked with and around and coached. One would be one that I've been like an avid, longtime customer for. And one would be one that I've maybe engaged with peripherally. And I think I'm really excited to hear your thoughts on these two.
Awesome.
I think it'd be cool to examine. And so the first one is one that I've worked with and coached. It's an organization called Sargent.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with Herb Sargent. He has almost larger than life LinkedIn presence now. He's become a little bit of a celebrity in the construction industry. industry, but they do large scale infrastructure and excavation projects out of Maine. They're now spread across 5 states, 700 team members.
Okay.
Wildly brilliant culture. It's just incredible. It's making an industry impact. Yeah. And I would even say beyond industry impact now. So that's number one.
And
number two would be,
while you're thinking about these, I want to ask a simple question for each one from your perspective, because I think this is important for people to think about when they're thinking about brands. What would you say, as you name these brands, and Sargent particularly, what would you say that brand stands for as an observer from the outside, or a potential consumer, or a client, or they're your client? What do they stand for as a brand, if you could distill it down from your perspective?
Oh, it's easy. This is the evidence of a killer brand, yeah. Right? This is how crazy it is. You asked me the question and I immediately have an answer, right? Building people.
That's awesome.
Yes, they build projects, but more than that, they build people. And if you go, you can go and look at any of the executives that are from that company on LinkedIn. You can go and look at foremen from that company that are on job sites, and they've got LinkedIn profiles. And it is so wildly clear, this is a business that does infrastructure projects that are in the business of building people.
That's awesome.
It is so, and that's evident in the photos they take. It's evident in the stories they tell. It's evident in their internal podcast. It's evident on their website and the way they talk about their company. It is in everything. They stand for building people.
I love it. Company number
two. I think there's a study there in the fact that it's like, you could go look at Sargent for 2 minutes and you could have that answer,
I don't want to rush past this. I think this is, I asked the question, what do they stand for? Because I think as consumers, observers, customers, this is what we think about. We may not even realize we're processing this, but when we go to a company, unless we're thinking, I mean, even with Walmart, like, you're walking in thinking, I want something cheap. And that's what they stand for. They stand for giving, you know, Costco's the same way. They stand for like giving you massive, massive value at the lowest rate possible, right? Mm-hmm. And Sargent's gonna be the same way. And so I think as consumers in this, in sort of the ecosystem right now and in the marketplace, even if you're a business owner, these are things we should think about. What does this company stand for? Because otherwise, we're going to misalign who we are as a business or as a potential consumer for who we are, right? And what we believe in. So that's why I think this is a really, as we break it down, I think this is just really important to walk through. And so that's why we're taking the time to do this.
Yeah. Go to company number two?
Number two.
Yeah. The next one would be Lifetime Fitness.
Mm.
So I actually, I now live in a place that I'm a little bit too far away, but this is not an exaggeration. It broke my heart to cancel my membership there, which that is crazy, right? Like, it broke my heart to cancel something that I was paying $150 a month for.
Well, and stereotypically, gym memberships are not fun to cancel, by the way, for most people. Like, there's that Seinfeld episode comes to mind, but it's, That's amazing. It broke your heart to cancel. Why did it break your heart to cancel?
Yeah, and it speaks to, honestly, it speaks to their brand as well, that it wasn't very hard to cancel with them, right? Because they believe in the value they provide, I think. But man, if I was to think back to your question, your question before, like, what does Lifetime stand for? I haven't been involved in culture conversations, but I do remember talking to someone at their front desk once, and like, I can't even remember how we got to this, right? I wasn't asking some super intuitive, like, insightful questions about the organization's culture or strategy or anything like that. But something they said really stuck with me. They said, you know, we just believe that working out is hard enough as it is. So if we're going to build a place where people work out, we might as well make it as simple and enjoyable and delightful as possible. Wow. And the word that really stands out for me about that is like simple and delightful.
Hmm.
Right. I mean, truly, like, there are so many things that Lifetime does well to reduce friction and increase delight one really, really basic example that goes a long way. The gym that I go at now, it's in a different league, right? It's not even close to Lifetime in terms of quality and in terms of care and intentionality. And so when machines break, because machines break, they just put a sign on it that says out of order, right? Lifetime, machines still break at Lifetime, but the sign is printed. It's not just scratched on and look like a second grader wrote it, right? The sign is printed and it says, we'll be back in service by, and then it has the date that you can anticipate it will be back by, right? And so that's saying like, hey, we're not able to deliver the value that we originally committed to in this moment, but we're going to set expectations for you. That holds their team accountable, but then it also helps me remember like, oh, these guys want it to be working too. Yeah. Meanwhile, like at this other gym, stuff will be broken for like a month, right? And it just sits there. Lifetime, it takes like 48 hours and things are back on and back on.
Wow.
And so that's like such a small thing, but like you can see how simple and delightful are two things that they stand for, right? That are going to have ramifications for something as mundane and menial as what do we do when a machine breaks?
Yeah.
And it informs the way whoever the operations manager is asks that question, because instead of saying like, what do we need to do when a machine breaks? They ask the question, how do we respond in a way that is simple and delightful whenever a machine breaks?
Yes.
That's a radically different question.
Yes. Yes. And again, that is that high level answer that if that question is answered, who are we as a brand? What do we stand for? All of the little potential decisions are very, very easy. So good. So good. Business number three.
Business number three would be Tracksmith. And this is one that I think I own one thing from them.
Okay.
But it's the type of thing that I would probably never anticipate myself buying, because they are a, I would say, a luxury brand for runners. Right. And so it's like, I own like a Henley black long sleeve shirt, and like their t-shirts cost like $75. It's absurd. Right. Like, and I never, right. Like I own a total of 9 other shirts and all of them cost less than $15. Yeah. So the fact that one of the shirts that I own is a $75 shirt is like absurd. Right. Like I don't do that. The thing that probably persuaded me the most was their brand though. Mm. Right. They and they call themselves, their copywriting is, I think it's probably the best copywriting brand I've ever engaged with outside of maybe Jenny's Ice Cream. Jenny's Ice Cream has really good copywriters
and
too.
Great ice cream.
But yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That would be another brand that we could talk about. But, but Tracksmith, like they call themselves champion for the running class.
Okay.
And they paint such an aspirational identity with their photos and with their copy. Mm-hmm. And when you read their stuff and when you look at their stuff, if you're a runner, right. And you take running seriously, specifically if you take amateur running seriously, you read it and you spend time on their website and you just say, these people get me.
Yeah.
Like they understand, they get excited about the things that I get excited about. Like they see value in the things that I see value in. And it's like, if you've been in a stage of your life where you really value running and you like you have fallen in love with running, it is like an emotional thing for you, right? Like it really is a deeply spiritual thing in so many ways. And you spend time on their site and you're like, they communicate about running the way that I wish I could, because they're saying what I feel.
Yeah.
And man, it's a great study in exceptional branding and copywriting.
Yeah. That's amazing. And this is just, I think this is an important note for people as we wrap here too, because we could talk about this all day long. But we do need a time limit for today's conversation. It's just an excellent way that you as a, if you're a business owner, if you were even someone who works at a company, you're an executive, just ask yourself or ask your team members, what do you think we stand for? Because one of the best ways to figure out whether you're on brand or not on brand as an organization is asking your people and the people you serve, what do you think we stand for as a brand? And if they are any different from each other, you have work to do. And I think this is just a powerful exercise, and it's a simple exercise that, again, if you're questioning or don't see the efficiency or the immediate ROI, just go ask that question. Take 5 minutes, ask your people that question in a team meeting, and see what happens. Alex, I'm really curious. Our company's name Parable, it's based off of this idea biblically that a parable, it's a short story spoken to the right person at the right time in the right place, leaves massive impact. You and I both know who did that very well. But I like to ask people sort of at the end here, as an individual, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, as a brand, Path for Growth, what would you say Alex's parable might be? A short, sort of simple story, when spoken to the right person at the right time, might leave massive impact. And I'm not asking from a place of your pride or your ego. But if you were to look at your life and what the things that you built and the things you stand for, what might be your parable?
Could I shift that and tell you the parable of Path for Growth?
Absolutely.
We coincide with a customer. Gosh, it was probably about 2 months into starting the business. Mm-hmm. And he called originally saying, hey, I would like to work with y'all to grow my business. And he was really excited about that.
Yeah.
And obviously we were excited about that as well. He signed up as a one-on-one customer. At the time I was doing the one-on-one coaching for the team, and we went through an intensive process. And one of the first stages of our intensive process is getting people bought into the idea of healthy growth, because mm-hmm. we remind people like health and growth is not the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. So, you can be growing and be healthy, but if you're not healthy, you're going to really struggle to grow sustainably over time, mm-hmm. right? And so as part of healthy growth, one of the conversations that this gentleman and I had was, man, if you want to put your business in order, let's start by putting yourself in order.
Yeah.
Right? Because I've never seen a frantic, frazzled, feeble, weak leader lead a wildly organized, healthy, constructive, productive organization. I've never seen it, right?
Yeah.
And he agreed to that. He was like, yep, that makes total sense to me. And so what was so cool is that kind of built the trust with him, like say like, okay, well, let's open up about where you're at personally as a leader.
Yeah.
And he started to share the story of how him and his wife had engaged with some trauma several years before that had quite frankly almost taken them out. Like mm-hmm. it was the type of thing that you would never wish on anyone.
Yeah.
And it just crushed him. And that trauma had sat kind of a little bit like undealt with for years and years and years. And it was at this point that it was really starting to reap havoc on their marriage, on his personal health, yeah. and on his like level of motivation for living and getting out of bed in the morning, on his hopefulness for the future. I was so grateful that he was so candid about this. Mm. And that enabled us to have a conversation where we said, okay, let's not try and eat the whole elephant at once. What's one thing that you would do every single day that would start to move you towards order? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, if I got up every morning at the same time and worked out every morning.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, would you do that? And he said, yeah, I think I would do that. And we said, okay, we're going to do that. And he started to like tilt his head a little bit and be like, I was signing up for business coaching. Where's the business coaching? And I was like, you got to trust me, man.
Yeah.
Like we're in a process. What's wild is he started doing that. Mm-hmm. And what we started to see happen was what always happens with what's called a keystone habit, that there are certain things that if you do them consistently over time, have a ripple effect or ramifications for every other thing you do.
Powerful.
And suddenly, because he was getting up at the same time, he was going to bed at the same time. And because he was going to bed at the same time, he started to establish an evening routine. Mm-hmm. And he was starting to eat healthier because he was working out. And because he was eating healthier and working out and getting enough sleep, he had energy whenever he got home from work at 6 p.m. to actually talk to his wife instead of just turn on the TV. Wow. And all these things started to happen. And then as he started to get some sanity in his home life, and his wife and him started to talk again, they started to go to church again, they explored seeing a counselor again. Well, then suddenly it's like he would go into the office and not just have to hide in his office away from all the problems and trouble mm-hmm. that owning a business comes up with. He was able to take it on as like a courageous courageous participant. And he started to say, okay, what would a good CEO do in this situation? What would I focus on if I was really prioritizing what I should be prioritizing instead of hiding from it? And what's crazy is I look at this guy now, and 3 years later, his marriage is healthy. I talked to him 2 weeks ago. Yeah. He's run a marathon, and he had never run more than a 5K in his life. His business is thriving to such a degree that he's launched another business, and he has hope and vision and passion that is all rooted in a deep-seated faith in Jesus Christ.
Unreal.
I mean, I like, it's really hard for me to tell a story that gives me chills. That's right. I can, that can happen when someone else tells a story, but it's like, man, that's why I left my job. That's why I did it. Good. Right. It's stories like that. And I think that's the parable of our company and what we're doing.
Alex Judd, founder of Path for Growth, just amazing, amazing things happening. We probably do have 8 to 12 more hours worth of conversation to have, but we'll cut this one short today. Where can people connect with you, follow along with your journey and with Path for Growth?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Pathforgrowth.com is the website for the company. And we've got different newsletters and things and different free giveaways that you can check out there if you're interested in it. We also have a podcast called Path for Growth that we put out every single week. And then I love connecting with people on LinkedIn as well.
So wonderful. Alex, thank you again for sharing and for your time and your heart, your vision, your business. Really appreciate you. Thanks for coming on.
Well, Luke, so appreciate you. Appreciate the mission that you're on and what you're building with Parable. I believe in it so much. And the reason why I believe in it so much is because I believe in the heart behind it. Mm. So I appreciate you for hosting such a meaningful conversation today.